Hi, greetings and welcome to all of our podcast listeners. Whether you're coming at us from Dimension Door or Shield Bash feeds, this is Jason, player of Tam Westcrown and Audiomancer of Shield Bash. I'm here with James. I really should ask this. Is it Schwartz?
Schwartz.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha. I imagine that was a lot of jokes in the nerd community for you.
It was great growing up with that. You know, everyone's like, oh, Emilia Schwartz be with you. And then I have to explain to them, well, it's spelled slightly different. You know, that Schwartz is Schwartz with a T, which is typically a Jewish heritage, and Schwartz without the T translates straight into Germanic, which is black. So, yeah. And then they'd be like, oh, okay. And I'm like, yeah, you didn't need to know that. It's just a fun fact for you. Yeah, Spaceballs, cool. Yeah, yogurt. Yeah. All right, let's go.
Yeah, woo. I mean, my last name is still Leonard, and so I got to have all of the Leonardo Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle stuff. So it's yours gets to last a little longer into your adult life.
It does, yeah. Especially, you know, Mel Gibson. So.
Yeah,
and cult classic like that. I don't know. I think that, like, in the grand scheme of things, TMNT is going to outlive Spaceballs.
Probably. I mean, they do keep remaking it, but
yeah, with all the revivals and it's hip with the kids and
word to the
kids.
Yes,
out there.
But anyway, so again, I'm Jason. I'm joined by James from the Dimension Door podcast. Why don't you tell us a little bit about Dimension Door, James?
Yeah, so Dimension Door is a Pathfinder actual play podcast, and we're playing through Paizo's Reign of Winter campaign. It's wonderful. We had a nice start, and then once you hit episode 10, our audio editor, Zach, he's an award-winning audio editor. He's a professional musician. He actually started doing full orchestral compositions for us. So now we're running with full custom audio. That's really beautiful and wonderful. We're playing with my wonderful wife, Zach, his wife, and then my cousin David. And it's a rowdy group of fun. We have a lot of greatness and wonder, and it's a blast. It's a giant fucking blast.
And it's one of two podcasts in your guys' family, right. Too.
Yeah, so we just launched our second podcast, which is another actual play podcast, for Paizo's, I want to say Severed Fate, because that's the name of the show, Carrion Crown, the horror adventure path that Paizo put out. So that one's actually being run by one of the players in the standard show, Amanda, and she is running it for Zach, and then we're joined by two new cast members, Nick Thunder and Madison Rogers.
Only three players?
Yeah, it's a three-player party. The gimmick for that one, I shouldn't say gimmick, the lead-in for that one is that they are all half-siblings, and half of them, they all come from the same father, who is a vampire, so they're all half, like, vampire. And then they're also bards, so they're using the Gestalt rule. So every level they get a level in bard, and then they get a level in whatever else they want to do. So that has a lot of moving parts. That one's exceptionally cool, too, because we got permission from a local band here in Arizona called Atavant. And the best way to describe them is Viking metal. So they provide all of the music for the battle tracks, and it's super thematic and kind of grungy feeling. It's wonderful. It's absolutely wonderful.
It sounds fantastic. I haven't personally had a chance to get into that one yet. It's on my long list of
list of podcasts that you want to listen to and catch up on, which is always expanding. Like, I was a purist for a while. I was like, yeah, I'm going to listen to, you know, every single episode and give it my full undivided attention. And now I'm like, okay, I'm going to go and I'm going to do a bunch of photo editing, and I'm going to listen to this show, and I'm going to listen to it at 1.5 times speed and just, like, consume it. Which is like, and I've stepped away from, like, the purity of it, right? Like the, oh, this is going to get my full undivided attention. I'm like, no, I'm going to consume everything. And that's still a worthy way to listen to shows, right? We all have our different reasons for why we listen. And mine is to meet new people, discover new shows, and try and support them how I can.
Yeah. I personally, I almost can never give undivided attention to any one thing. I usually am working or playing video games while I'm doing podcasts, because I can't just sit and listen. I have to do something else.
Yeah, I am the exact same way. I am working in, 12 different projects at once. So, having a podcast on in the background is awesome. I spend a lot of time driving around for my day job, so it's just constant feed.
And for your guys' feed in the Dimension Door who don't know who we are, Shield Bash is an actual play. We are doing Serpent's Skull. And the way we tend to describe ourselves is six assholes and a guy named Will. And don't let your kids listen.
There you go. Kids probably shouldn't listen to ours either. It's not too bad. We're like PG-13 with some R-rated gore.
Yeah, we are definitely an NC-17. That's and we make no apologies for it, but we will be, I obviously will not be going too off the rails here in this episode. That being said, today is the introduction. James, you are the first. I don't know if you're aware of that. You are the absolute first for this new experiment we're trying, where we are going to be doing conversations on a meta level topic.
Yes, and I'm excited.
And James has chosen collaborative storytelling between the DM and players.
Yes,
it's a very integral part of the game, because it's a storytelling game. If you just wanted combat simulation, you'd be playing Warhammer. But here, you are playing a storytelling game. And every group, obviously, is a little different in the level of storytelling versus combat versus other things as to what your table likes to have. But one of the biggest things for me as a DM and as a player is that a PC is sacrosanct. No DM can ever tell a player, in my opinion, what that character is feeling, what they do, what they should do. You can alter the things around them, but you can't mess with them. You have to work with them and what they, and obviously they then also have to work with you to make sure that their character fits. And I've had some really bizarre backstories. I've had people come in with really awesome characters that have zero backstory. David, you're not David, sorry.
I'm not David.
No,
we have
no,
a David. That's,
yes, James, sorry.
Yeah, that's all right.
What is the, in your opinion, the first thing that you think of when it comes to collaborative storytelling?
When it comes to collaborative story, I think that the most important thing to foster with collaborative storytelling is, get rid of the hostility. This isn't a game that is about, whoever is running the game, right? The game master. It's not them versus the players, which is just so toxic to a table, I think. I am not competing to, kill off characters, and the characters aren't, competing to, best me and, trick me into, saying something and being like, oh, well, you said it, so it's true. It's collaborative storytelling is literally, collaborative. You have to work together. And that's really getting rid of kind of, the animosity, the competition of the game of trying to beat each other, and really just, not viewing each other as adversaries, but viewing each other as, literal storytellers, right? Where we're building a story together. And in order to do that, I'm not going to go out of my way to kill you. I'm not going to devise this way. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to kill him this time. I might come up with scenarios and situations where, if there's a chance for death here, but I don't think I've ever gone through with something that's okay, this is going to be the death box. I'm going to throw everything I can. I want to kill someone tonight. I love death. I love tragedy in storytelling, but I don't like going out of my way for it, because if I go out of my way, if I push it, it doesn't feel natural. And yeah, that doesn't,
death has to mean something.
Kind of. I love that. I love it when deaths are big and heroic, but on the flip side of that, I love it when deaths are meaningless. As fucked up as that is, I love a really morose, meaningless death in a campaign, because I think the entire time we're playing, we're really walking the line between, you know, fantasy and reality. There's a lot of like, the term is like a bleed over, right? We have a lot of our own emotions and we put them in the game. And for me, one of the things that I like to try and help my players explore is the idea of obviously loss. Like when you lose a character, right? That's a huge blow, especially when it's your first character. I've done a lot of games for like first time players, and I always get really nervous the first time they die, because a lot of times, like after that first one, like they spent so much time working on him and then it's just gone. And they're like, I don't want to do this anymore. But I've never had a player quit after a death, which is good. They've always come back and they're like, yeah, the first one was hard, but like, I understand it now. And it's like, I understand why the death had to happen. Like, it builds into the meaning of the world. But having a meaningless death, I think, is very reminiscent of reality, right? That it sucks, but death is a thing in our own lives. And a lot of times when it happens, it's not big and heroic. And it didn't happen for like some greater glory. It just happened.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where I think a lot of people delve into like dark places, because they want to find the meaning behind the death and find the reason why it happened. But sometimes there isn't. Sometimes bad things just happen and we have to figure out how to move forward. And that's something that I love. I love a meaningless death in a game, because if it doesn't happen in a heroic way, it really just binds the party together, right? Anyone that's left, they are bound together by that tragedy, and it often opens up a lot of windows into people's emotions, and you get a lot better like crosstalk with players and their characters, and like everyone's comforting everybody. The characters in game are comforting each other, the players at the table are comforting each other. It's beautiful. It's fucking beautiful. And I love tragedy. I love tragedy so much because of that. Like, I'm all for like having jokes and fun at the table and like, yeah, let's like grind this tower and solve the puzzle. But I love it. I love it when there's like an epic failure, a total tragic moment, because as much as tabletop games are like an escape, I still like them to mirror reality. And bad shit happens and tragedy happens in real life, and I love it when it's mirrored in game, because it is also a controllable environment, right? Like, bad stuff happens in game, but we're all sitting at the table, we're safe. Like, we are able to kind of pause time, talk everything through. I think it makes a safe space to start exploring these feelings of loss and grief at the table, which is great. And you can't do that if you're not working together. Because if you do have that kind of animosity at the table and somebody dies, it's fires are lit, you know, the competition's on. I'm going to kill your monsters and how dare you kill me, and I'm going to stick it to you, which isn't, that's not natural. You don't like go and stick it to the universe when your goldfish dies. You mourn it at 5 years old and you realize that life doesn't last forever, and you figure out how to move on. Did I answer the question? Was there a question in there somewhere?
No, there was. And you have done an A++ job where you answered the question and then a few others, I think.
Oh, so, good.
Yeah.
I ramble sometimes. Feel free to interrupt me. I love thinking about this stuff. Like, I mean, that's part of the reason why I chose it, right? It's definitely a passion of mine, is having this friendliness at the table, having that environment, and then just fucking ourselves with it.
And the group I started gaming with well over 10 years ago now, there was that concept, and it never reached the point where I felt it was toxic. I mean, yeah. We're still gaming together, but it was always like, you know, hey, make a save. What against? It's a will save. Okay, but what against? Well, just make a will save. I'm like, okay, well, I've got bonuses to like 5 things. Give me an answer. You know, yeah. Where it was like everybody was trying to hide what they were doing because, yeah. It took me years to realize, like, this is kind of a shitty way to play.
Yeah,
like, we need to fix this. So, like, I personally have tried real hard to, like, give that information. It's like, okay, make a will save against the transmutation effect.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, somebody over here is casting a spell. make a reflex save, you know, and things like that. And it's just, I've also found it just makes the game, not only is it a little more fun, but it just goes faster too.
Yeah, it does.
To like pick at each other all the time.
Yeah, and that's especially like nowadays where like we're stuck at home, we're playing online, like nobody wants to sit at their desk, you know, in their pajamas and listen to two people bicker about what rules are what. Like, come on, let's go, let's play it, let's play the game, let's just resolve this and move forward. Because like long term, like, is that one save going to, you know, with the bonuses and you hiding that bonus, how long are you going to hide that bonus for? How long are you going to hide what kind of spell that was for? You know, it's like, it's so short-sighted to try and fool each other at the table when the thing you can do, you know, to counteract that is to kind of have this open dialogue. Like, a lot of times I'll be running things and, you know, our parties will be trying to figure out how to infiltrate a fortress or something, and they're always looking for that perfect solution, right? The thing that's not going to get them caught, the thing that's going to let them bypass the monsters and not alert everybody. And
yeah, where they spend, the party spends 20 minutes talking about, you know, a solution, and you as the gamer bashing your head, like, just please try something.
Yeah. Analysis paralysis is what one of my players coined, and I love that. It is, because players get, like, stuck in their heads, and they're trying to find a way. So, like, when they're doing that, one of the things I've found that helps break out of that, you know, those 20-minute jam sessions of just going in circles and picking all the problems in every plan, is actually like voicing my thoughts as the DM. Like, if something comes up, I'd be like, yeah, that could work. Like, I never have the perfect solution, right? I never have the perfect plan for them that they need to figure it out and then they can do it. No, like, I love them coming up with things, and like, I will adapt. So I love having a living world. That's kind of one of the things that a lot of my players like, that I've kind of coined the term of, a living world. I make decisions for what is going to happen in the world and kind of when, and I have like set timelines. And so every choice they make, I try and like mentally adapt for it moving forward. So like, if they come up with a plan that's like, oh, well, we're going to do this and this, and if it's going into an area I haven't planned before, I'm like, okay, so given my crazy ass world state, what are they likely to encounter? And that's always so much fun.
Yeah,
it's so much fun coming up with different ways to just throw like little things in their way that make sense, right? Not trying to stop them, but make the plan seem reasonable and like the world and like the choice was there all along, and somehow they came across the right one because, you know, they had to do these different checks to get there and they encountered a thing. And a lot of times they're like, oh man, tell us more about that section. I'm like, no, I made that up. I made that shit up. You guys had this plan and I didn't want to stop you. I was like, yeah, go for it. Let's wing it.
So you are far nicer about that than I am. When my players get stuck, I have the philosophy of in walks the man with the gun.
Yeah. Yeah, that's... Yep. In the worst case scenarios, yeah, you aggro the party and you force them to make a decision. That is, it's a good tactic, honestly. Like, there's certain instances where they're still, like, after I say, like, yeah, you could do this or you could do this, they still spend 20 minutes like, oh, no, we should do that because of this. And they're like, well, actually, because of this. And then I'm like, all right. Time's up. Yeah, because, like, how much of this discussion is meta and how much of this discussion is your players, like, the characters having this discussion? And there's so much bleed over in that time, like, especially if they're like dropping in and out of character voices, you know. And at a certain point, yeah, you guys say like, you guys have been talking like this for like at least 5 minutes above like loud temperature, here's a guy, keep going, let's go. And it is, that's like one of the things that you have to do as a game master. You have to figure out the ways to break players out of that paralytic state, because I fucking hate that paralytic state. I've played in games where we get into analysis paralysis and I just check out and I am 1,000-yard stare waiting for someone to like concede and say, yeah, you're right, we should do your plan. And I just, oh, that kills it. That kills the game for me. That kills all the fun and I hate it. I love coming up with crazy ass plans, but I don't like going back and forth on whether or not it could work given the millions of possibilities in the game.
Yeah, no, my record and the story I like to tell is I was running a society scenario called Fragments of Antiquity, and there's a collapsing bridge, spoiler alert.
Ooh.
And it's in the first like 15 minutes of the scenario, or it should be, We were an hour into the 4-hour block, and I was like, guys, it's a freaking bridge. Like, you've come up with like 12 plans. Try one of them.
Yeah.
Please. We only have 3 hours left. Go.
Yeah.
You've got a whole thing. Oh, man. I was about to tear my hair out with those guys, but we have completely wandered off of our
yeah, sorry, our topic. Feel free to redirect me at any time.
I will sit and listen. I love, like I said, this is my major passion. I love talking about this, but the thing that I want to kind of redirect us back onto, the beginning part of any collaborative storytelling in any campaign, is before you even start the game, with character backstories.
Yes, character, you know, backstories.
And for me, the most important part of a character backstory is why.
Yeah.
That's, you know, why are they there? Why are they adventuring? Why are they doing this thing in whatever campaign you're running? And why are they willing to risk their lives to continue doing the thing?
Yeah. It's almost like you've identified that the most important part about a character is motivation. Which it is. It really is. Because once you figure out like your character's motivation, you're going to know how to play them. You're going to know when to not make the smart decision and make the in-character decision. That's super flavorful and really fleshes out your character. Like, I love playing stupid characters. I love playing low-int, low-wisdom characters. Because me, James, super heavy into the lore of Pathfinder and Galarian. I've read a bunch of, like, parts of AP, so I know tons of spoilers. I love playing stupid. And even better than that, I love it when I fail a check and just make shit up. That is definitely wrong. My character thinks it's right, though. And it's just, it's a fun red herring that other players can give each other, right? And that's kind of like stoking the fuels of fun at the table is really like, I think having one player that is making those decisions to like nerf their character in some way or behave a certain way. The ones that have really hardlined their motivation, like you came up with, right? That really important thing to flesh out your character. The one, like having one great player that's good at that is the most nurturing thing for other players at the table, in my opinion.
As long as they are willing to, again, collaborate and, yes, you know, work with that, especially like when you get false information. We, like in Shield Bash, we are basically 120 years of combined experience of gaming, right? Mm-hmm. So a lot of them know, like, hey, if you say that skeleton's actually, you know, the DR is bypassed by piercing, everybody at the table knows that's not true. But if they're willing to work together and say, well, this is the information we have,
yeah,
let's go stab it.
Yep.
And not, you know, just walk past it or like, oh yeah, no, the mayor of this town is definitely a vampire because the guy who makes all of our checks totally said that.
Yeah.
And we don't know that he bombed the roll, so yeah, that guy's a vampire. As opposed to just being like, well, that's clearly not true and moving on, you know, and having that team moment.
Yeah, you do, and it is. And that's the part that kind of feeds back into the collaboration. You have to all be working together and be on the same page. Because if there's people that are working on like a meta level against like what the narrative is, like what the characters should know and how they should be acting, if you have somebody on the meta level, that's not fun. That's giving your character like godlike premonitions of the universe. That's not realistic. You kidding me?
One of the things I run into with a lot of backstories is that a lot of players confuse the what with the why, you know?
Yeah.
They come with a what they want, and I'm like, yeah, but like, why are they doing this? Well, because of this. I'm like, no, that's what they want. Why do they want it?
Yeah.
What's one of the main obstacles you tend to run into with backstories?
People are too big for their britches.
You mean that level one character who
the level one character wars? That fought in two wars and has this pact with this demon, and you know they're out to save the world, and that's not level one.
No.
Look in any campaign setting, look at any of the NPCs, nobody has that kind of story, and they are all higher level than you.
Yeah.
And I had to do that so many times where I'm like, oh, cool. Walk backward 4 steps. Tone this down. And it's just like, I know that's what you want your character to be, but that is a character that has gone through a story, like an actual campaign that has been tried and true.
Yeah.
And has like this medal, and they're already a badass. You're not there yet. You're little level one warrior with a wooden training sword. Go figure that out and come up with a story for that. And that's a big thing that I've seen happen, but it's also something that I completely understand. Like, I get that they want to have that kind of fleshed outness, because coming to the table with a really nice fleshed out character and having all those like past experiences helps you make further decisions. But having that level one starting cap for like who your character is kind of messed up. I think that's something that very personally, probably very controversially, I think campaigns are wrong at starting most parties off at level one. Because when all of these situations happen in towns, like wherever the starting adventure is, right, some kind of bad thing happens and the party has to come together and go and fix the thing. Why are all of these towns and groups getting together, these level one people with absolutely no real world experience, to go and solve the important thing?
Yeah.
And that doesn't make sense to me.
When I listened to Dimension Door, I actually was a couple episodes in, and I'm like, are these guys level three?
They are. Yeah. I started everybody at level three for Dimension Door because it makes sense to me. You have, spoiler alert, this is all episode one spoilers, so not real spoiler alert. You have a noble woman that's been kidnapped. You have a supernatural pocket of winter, and there's just this small town full of like farmers and hunters, and let's send out a bunch of level ones to go and save the extremely important noble who's been kidnapped. Why?
It's understandable.
Totally understandable. Looking through the back of the book and looking at all of the NPCs that are like level 4 and 5 and 7. Nah, they got better shit to do, like run their store and chop wood. How dare the mayor ask them for help?
And anything you run out of Sandpoint, you're going to run into the same thing, because for all that Sandpoint's a small town, there's like, well, there's two bookstores run by level 5 retired wizards, and two alchemist shops run by, you know, it's like, the whole place is retired adventurers.
Yeah, like, why not send one of them out to solve this problem instead of sending out these greens, like, green kids that are probably going to die? Like, that part in my brain, I haven't found a reason to make it work yet. Like, I'm sure there's adventure paths out there that are more specific to that and why they do that, which is cool. But for like for Reign of Winter, it didn't make sense for me. Yeah. And that's why I started everybody off at level 3. I did a couple other like meta level reasons for it, but that was the biggest one.
Yeah. Serpent Skull, I will say, makes a little more sense because it's like your characters are shipwrecked.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you're not chosen. Like you're
thrust into the situation. Yeah, and that makes more sense to me. Like, yeah. Situations like that where you like you're isolated, where you have to, not because you've been chosen or have volunteered for some crazy ass reason, but because you are thrust into, like, it's like that saying about like some people are born great, some achieve greatness, and some have greatness thrust upon them. It's like that. You have greatness thrust upon you because you have to do it, right? You don't have a choice in that matter. But for a lot of these games, it's like, you have a choice. Why did you all make the worst choice sending the least experienced people out to solve the problem? Like, that broke my mind so many times when I saw it. Now, my own devil's advocate, I will never, ever, ever start a party off higher than level 1 if there are new players in the game.
That's fair.
If you have never played like Pathfinder before, I will never ask you to make a character above first level, because that is horrific. Like, any kind of new system, if your first character is going to be multi-leveled, oh my god, I would feel so fucked. I would feel absolutely fucked.
Whenever I'd introduce new players back in the day, I was, okay, you're going to play at first level, human warrior. That's it. Like, it's that's what you're playing. Like,
yeah,
you know, you get a couple sessions in, you can switch, but like, let's start with human fighter because it's the easiest thing.
Yeah, that's a very good thing. We had a recent discussion going on our Discord. One of our listeners was like, "Hey, I'm never played Pathfinder, but I'm making a Pathfinder character for this game. What would you guys recommend? I want to kind of be a magic person." And I was like, "Okay, cool. Don't be a druid. Don't be a druid. Whatever you do, do not be a druid." And so I think there are very like introductory classes, right, for each of them. So like, magic wise, if you want to learn the magic rules like really well, but not be overwhelmed, I think you should pick a sorcerer. Like, you don't have to worry about, you know, spell prepping every morning. You just pick the spells. You aren't overwhelmed with options like clerics. Like, you don't get your whole spell list and have to just digest it. Yeah. It's incremental build up, and you get to learn like the rules for like focuses, for components, you know,
casting times and
casting
ranges
times,
and
yeah, ranges, all of that stuff. Like, you get to learn that incrementally as you go, which is important. And yeah, I think that new players who want to get into gaming, fucking do it. Make sure you have a cool ass GM. And one of the things I do with my players is like, for the first couple levels, especially if they're new, I will be just reminding them about game mechanics. Like, oh, well, you could charge this person if you wanted to, or, you know, I see where you moved, but if you move over here, you're going to give this person flanking. And I think a lot of that is like meta knowledge that some players just don't have and they don't remember, but like, their character probably would. And yeah, I think it's, oh, like, that's kind of where we like, I give, like, it's like offering someone like breadcrumbs. It's not breadcrumbs. Offering them a gift of shows amicable.
You're being nice to them.
Yeah, I'm being nice to them. Yeah, I'm being nice to them. I'm like, hey, you should. I am telling you this, and yeah, it's going to probably be worse for the monsters you guys are fighting. But like, I never want people to not make a decision for their character when I have meta knowledge about like mechanics and stuff, because if they had that meta knowledge about mechanics and stuff, they could probably make a better informed decision. And I'm all about informed decisions.
Yeah. You know, it ties all the way back into, you shouldn't hide things from people.
No, you shouldn't. Yeah. You shouldn't. Just yeah. Keep it out there. Be open, be honest with each other, and like, help each other out. Like, even I've had players that like, because like, once you extend that like that nicety, like, chances are players are gonna give it in return. They'll be like, oh man, that creature could like do this and this and like shove me off the edge. And I'm like, yeah, they could, you're right, I'm gonna have to do that. And they're like, I understand. Which is like, it's a big ask, but just having that like two-way communication open where it's like, I want the world to make sense, and I want everything to make a decision like based on the information it has. And when you start like hardwalling people on based on meta information, I have this idea of like this mechanic and everything like that. There are so many rules, right? I don't know all the rules of Pathfinder. There's too many. And yeah, I like reminding people about like the way certain mechanics work, or like little strategies about like action economy, especially, is huge.
You mean like, the core of the game, action economy?
Yeah, the core of the game. If you like, the core of the game is even complicated, but like, if you aren't making decisions like based on like good knowledge of the core of the game, like, I don't care if someone is playing like a level 3 fighter and they're brand new to the game, and you have like a veteran with like 20 years under the belt playing a level 1 fighter, that level 1 fighter is going to be played smarter and better than the level 3 fighter. Like, if we look at that like in world, right? If you have that level 1 fighter that can like run circles strategically around the level 3 fighter, that doesn't make a lot of sense. And so really helping each other out at the table kind of evens that out, right? Because if everyone had the same meta knowledge, the level 3 fighter would beat the shit out of the level 1 fighter.
Oh, yeah.
And so it is. It's that kind of, you need to be able to, like, be nice to each other at the table and remind each other about mechanics and rules and, like, accept that, like, yeah, it's going to be good for you and it's going to be bad for you. But at the end of the day, it's all about making the informed decisions that are gonna like let us have a great, awesome game.
Have you ever had it gone particularly bad? Like, if you ever had one player that is just, even when you're trying to help them, they just make it worse?
Yes. Yes, I have. I have kicked them out of my game. I hate it, right? I hate the sticklers that are, like, so adamant and against, like, collaborative storytelling, and then get caught up in the wargaming aspect of TTRPGs, which... there's a time and a place for wargaming. I get it. That's not the game I'm trying to play. And I think that's something to make really clear when you're trying to form a gaming group, is you need to make sure that everyone is on the same page with how they want to play the game.
Because setting expectations is always very important.
Yeah, because if you have one person at the table that's min-maxing everything, you know, they're just going to be clearing encounters because everybody else at the table is like, oh, we're in it for the role play and we have these cool, flavorful characters. And so if you have one person in the party that has gone through the trouble of making the most overpowered character they possibly can, you run into an almost insurmountable roadblock where you reach combat mechanics and it's either... they're going to clear the combats every single time, no problem, and that can't be a narrative device anymore, or your combats are going to be so complicated and involved around killing one player that all of the other players can easily be wiped in the process.
Yeah, and then that player with the min-max feels targeted.
Exactly.
Yeah, and encounter design can be very complicated.
It is a monster.
And then when you have that lack of balance in the party, it just... that's why, look, personally, I'm a big fan of Session Zero.
Session Zero is so important.
Yeah.
The GM
gets to set the expectations of what they want from the players. The players can set the expectations from what they want from the GM. The campaign is discussed, and the players, I find, can generally balance themselves and each other based on that Session Zero conversation of like, okay, well, because when I first started, I didn't want people to discuss what they were playing. I just wanted them to play whatever they wanted so they were happy with their characters. And then when I ended up with two wizards, a sorcerer and a witch and a rogue and a cleric, and I'm like, wow, this party's hosed.
Yeah, they're fucked.
Yeah. It was like, okay, we're going to discuss characters from now on. Like, that was my turning point of like, okay, you guys, like, we need to work together. Everybody can still play what they want. You know, we'll make sure everybody's going to be happy, but you need, like, we need to, this is a team game. What the hell was I thinking? Let's build a team.
Yeah. Yeah. That party composition is big. That it is very big. And I think having the Session Zero, like, as soon as possible is important. Like, I've had this problem before with certain games where, you know, someone will be like, hey, do you want to play in this game? And I'll be like, yeah, sure. And then I'm like, cool, here's the player guide. I'm like, no! Because by the time we all come together to discuss it at the Session Zero, most people already have their characters, like, the idea of who they want, and maybe it's already built, and that's bad. That's very, very bad, because you're not working together from the start. And at a certain point, I kind of get it. Like, I want people to play what they want to play and have a good time. So, like, a lot of new games I start up for new players, I will tell them. I'll be like, hey, play what character you want. Here's kind of the rules. Let me know if you need help building it. And then we'll have a sit down and we'll talk about it. And then a lot of times what I'll do is I'll get one of my like veteran players from another game, and I'll be like, hey, you want to come play an NPC for a while? And they'll be like, sure. And I just like, here's the role that needs to be filled. We're just trying to get these fledglings, you know, up and going a bit. But a lot of times for the new parties, if they all want to like play spellcasters, I'll be like, okay, you guys can all play spellcasters. And I'm going to try my damnedest to teach them how to take encounters properly. Because if you're playing a bunch of spellcasters, don't go kicking down the fucking door.
There's a story I heard a long time ago of this guy who was... it was him and his one friend that had played for a while. He was going to DM, and he had four new players. And They did like a session zero, a pre-campaign session, and yet they all decided, all four of the new players, to play wizards.
Oh, God.
Despite his insistence. So his one veteran friend was like, okay, well, he played an elven archer. And this was back when elves could see in the dark, right?
Uh-huh.
And they were all four newbies were humans, and the first adventure had them cave diving. And this is one of those stories that was just like, well, I'm not sure what the hell they were thinking, but the veteran friend, basically, he, you know, was holding the lamp, the lantern, and when everybody got into this tight corridor, he just smashed the lantern and said, rule number one, if you can't see in the dark, carry your own light source, and left him there to die.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah.
That's like a horror story.
Well, that's a dick move, is what it is.
It is a dick
like, you
move.
Know, you might as well just say, like, no, rebuild your characters, because this is not a... Like, you guys will die on your own, but...
Yeah, and that's the kind of thing that I hate. Like, fuck that guy! So yeah. They spend all of this time building their characters, we're all sitting down, we're having fun, and then you just, like, flip them the bird and be like, peace, guys, you know all that work you did, and I know I could have said something to stop it from happening, but I thought I would punish you for making an uninformed decision. Why?!
For some people, they think it's fun. I don't personally get it, but...
I don't either. And that's sad. Like, that's one of those situations where if I was a new player, I might not ever want to play again. If that was my first experience.
Oh, yeah.
Which is... Come on. Like, be inclusive. Like, don't punish people for wanting to play the game when they don't know the game. Like, teach them to play the game... Like, give them some leeway. Like, that's the other thing I do. Like, even with my veteran players, like, you can have your character on paper. It could look great. You could think it's going to play a certain way. And then you start to play the character. And maybe you have the motivation start to come out during session. And maybe some of the things you picked for that character don't make sense with the way you're playing them. Or maybe you don't like, you know, your archetype as much as you thought you would. I always have a 3-session rule, like, even for the podcast. If you have a new character... and play 3 sessions with it, make whatever changes you want. Like, I get it. I get that you will not know the character and how it feels and how it plays until you have time to kind of suss it out. So, like, that's something I do. I let players make changes, like, first 3 sessions of a new character. Like, if you think you need to adjust your stats or skills, like, go for it.
I do something similar with that where... When they level up the first time, I'm like, okay, you're about to level up. If you, like, new character, if you hate it, you got a feat that you're never using or whatever, this is the time to change it.
Yeah, I've done the same thing before, too. Especially, like, long form games and everything. Someone will come up to me and they'll be, like, level 8. And I'll be like, hey, I took this feat at level 2. I've never used it. Can I swap this out for something so I can, like, get this feat? And I'll be like... Yeah, sure, why not? Because, like, even in the Pathfinder rules, there's retraining.
Yeah.
And it's like, all right, so, sure, yeah, you haven't used it. There have been, like, 2 months in-game. If you haven't used that feat for 2 months, it's very easy to say that you've just been retraining it this whole time.
Yeah.
Like, there are in-game ways that you can kind of magically explain away and make the universe work to fit the situation, which has its place. Like, it, the whole thing, right? You want to be so hardline on one way to tell a story. Like, you want it to be organic. You want it to be true to the scenario. And you want it, like, everything to make sense. But sometimes when the things make sense, it's not fun at the table. And sometimes when things make sense, it blocks you out from making certain decisions. And that's where you need to make concessions, right? You need to be able to have that flexibility to let go of this, like, pure idea of what the game should be. And you need to, like, flex it. And you need to say, okay, this would be better for everyone if we did it this way. Or, yeah, you're right. That's a good idea. That's a good point. Let's do this. So, like, people's feelings aren't, like, super crushed or people are offended. Or there's so many different ways. Like, you need to play fast and loose isn't the right word. But, like, don't be a dick. Like, that's what it comes down to, I think. Like, don't be an asshole at my gaming table, and I won't be an asshole. And honestly, if that's your mindset, things are probably going to work out.
Yeah. one of the games I'm running is Kingmaker.
Oh, the infamous Kingmaker.
One of the I'm going with the option where between every book is a D20 in years.
Yeah.
And I think it was the start of book three, we essentially had a whole new party. Because so many years had passed, most of them retired, what have you. And I took this new party of like level fives or sixes and pit them against an enemy that there is no way they could take down without fatalities.
Yeah.
And in that fight, I killed three players.
Woo!
Ooh. And I knew I was going to kill players.
Yeah.
And some of them were rather upset. But I had planned for it with Scrolls of True Resurrection in there because this was a, hey, this is your new party. Let's see how you guys function with dealing with things that you can't handle. Like, let's see how far you can push.
Yeah.
But the players obviously didn't know that was going to happen. And they were, nonetheless, surprised and, you know, a little salty that the character they spent 2 weeks building died.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, all was forgiven once they realized they were coming right back. But how much do you like to surprise the people at your player, especially long-term campaigns like the podcast?
Yeah, that's a great question. And that's a good scenario. I like narrative hooks. I love those situations that kind of pop up and catch everyone by surprise. I think that throwing them like an exceptionally deadly enemy is great. But for me, I try and just catch them off guard, right? Blindside them completely with some kind of big twist or narrative hook or like this big reveal of some kind of someone's history. I've never gone for the kill box method. I think that it's fucking great. Like, there's definitely scenarios that I can think of where it's like, yep, someone's gonna die. Like, and I think that one of the things I do, which I don't know if this is like a good practice or not, is like when we're about to go into like a big battle or something, like kind of like to iterate like what's on the line, right? Like there's fights we'll go into and I'm like, now remember guys, this is the boss. This is the big bad that you guys have been looking for. And then I pause to let them process that. And then I just follow it up by smacking him in the face and saying, some of you have a very strong possibility of dying. I've never done that as like the start of a book or with a new party, though, which is, that's really interesting. That's really interesting.
Who are you?
It's oddly brilliant, right? Because it is playing on that, like, you need to trust me and I'll trust you sort of like two-way street. But that's also like, it's a little fucked up, but it pays off in the end. But during it, like, there's some salt. There's going to be some salt. And it is a little bit fucked up, but like having that light at the end of the tunnel is kind of okay. Like, I think if I were going to throw people into that kind of meat grinder right off the bat, I'd be like, hey, heads up. It's gonna be rough out the gate, and like not really explain it past that, but kind of let them anticipate some shittiness. But I don't know, that's such a unique scenario, and I think it really is like a player by player basis of how the people at the table are going to handle it.
And I will agree that your narrative blindsides are a lot more interesting, where it's, you know, the, oh yeah, you know, this guy's actually your brother.
Yeah.
That, like, you didn't know you had.
Yeah, like, I will always remember those more than I remember, like, the big battles and the epic moments. I'll always remember those things where, like, oh, I thought I knew everything about my character's past. It's my character. You're right. You thought you know everything your character knew. And what they knew was fucking wrong! And then you're just like, ah! My wife has a story from one of her old sessions that she played where this character was like, they were like level 10 or something, and they had like their whole backstory planned out, and they've been playing for years. And then the DM's like, by the way, you were brainwashed, and none of what you remember is true, and this is who you really are, and who your real family is. Wow. And the look of, like, horror and shock, and he was like, but it's on my sheet. Like,
it's such a... I don't know if I would have been happy or pissed.
I don't know either! And, like, that's where the gold is, right? Like, because there's these wonderful situations where we have all of these strong moments together as, like, GMs and players, and we're having a great time, and we're doing great stuff. And I think at a certain point, having that mentality at the table gives you the leeway to fuck with them.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, like, if you have that built trust between you, like, having a really fucked up moment like that, it's fucking huge. Like, that's memorable. But if you're just throwing them fucked up moment after fucked up moment, you're gonna get numb to it. You're gonna expect it, and it's not gonna be fun anymore. It's not gonna be meaningful. And yeah. there has to be meaning, right? There needs to be a reason for why everything in the universe is happening. Like, because that's how, you know, physics and making choices works. One thing leads to another thing, and, like, and I know I said earlier that, like, a meaningless death, like, something still caused the death, and the death itself has meaning in that, like, even if it's, like, this freak scenario.
And but, they will derive meaning from it.
And they will derive meaning from it, exactly. But, like, I don't like to make things happen just to make them happen. I like to have a reason for why it's happening, and that kind of, like, it works for the story. Because when you try something kind of fucked up like that, and you can't explain why it happened, and you have that, like, circle of trust at the table, most of the time I think players are going to understand, like, why it happened and why you did it.
You know, the expression I like is, it's a big world. There's a lot going on in it. You don't know most of it.
Yeah. And that's, yeah. And I think that's one of the things too, that, like, session zero is for. And, like, what I say when I'm like, yeah, take your character. That's great. I love it. Take two steps back though. Like, maybe you haven't talked directly to a god. Maybe you haven't had direct divine intervention from a being from another plane. Let's take two steps back. Yeah. Maybe you're not royalty, you know, yeah. let's take those epics. Let's break you down a little bit, and let's tell that story. Because I don't want to tell the story about, like, you know, the Justice League saves the cat from the tree. I want to tell the story about little Bobby, the 3-year-old that built a ladder out of sporks to climb the tree and save the cat. That's a much more interesting story with the same objective.
You don't get to play Buffy. You have to play Xander and Giles and, you know, Cordelia and all of them. Because, you know, if everybody's Buffy, then Buffy's not special. And if only one person's Buffy, then nobody else matters.
Yeah. And that's where Session Zero comes into play, right? Yeah. I don't want any one of my players to be more important than another. And so I think having those kind of narrative hooks, like, I like to find, like, one or two things in a character's backstory that are meaningful to them and that I can play with during the game. Because if, like, one person has, like, 20 things to pull on, one, you can't incorporate all of them. Like, that's impossible. But they also will have so many things going on that make them so much more important than the other players that it turns into, like, an RPG as opposed to an MMO. Yeah. And that's something that I really like to think about when I'm doing, like, games, is, like, this isn't a one-person game, right? This is everybody playing at once, and everybody here is as important as the next person.
Sharing the spotlight and all that.
Yeah, sharing the spotlight, giving characters and, like, people time to shine, like, coming up with these, like, different scenarios where, like, yeah, maybe you throw in this one thing that is, like, this person is going to kick ass at this, and everyone is going to appreciate them more for this, and you're going to grow together as a party, and you're going to fucking love each other by the end of this game.
How much do you tend to talk to your players about that ahead of time, or do you just like to be like, well, I'm going to do this with your backstory, or how much of it is... I'm actively doing this with your backstory, and you find about it in the session.
When I tell people, I tell players that, like, give me whatever backstory you want to come up with. I will tell you if I need to make changes to it or things don't matter. Like, things don't matter. That's a bad way to say that. I will tell you if there are things in there that need to change, given the world that is happening.
Yeah.
Right. If they come up with, it's happened a couple times where they'll like give me this big long backstory. I'm like, cool, let's change this, this, and this. And a lot of that too is like foresight for the campaign, right? Because like if they're like, oh well, I have, you know, three younger siblings and they do this, this, and this, and I'm like, oh cool. And then I look in the story and I'm like, oh, actually, it would be a lot more convenient narratively if I could bring one of these siblings into the story here. So maybe they have this slightly different profession or backstory or personality to make it fit into the game. And people are pretty good about making concessions in their backstories. And then there's other times where like they give me all the information. I'm like, okay, cool. You're good with this? And they're like, yeah, I'm great with this. And they'll give me like some really vague shit. And I'm like, perfect. And then I fuck with them on it. Like, that's where I get the twist, because it's one of those things, like, they think they know their story so well, and then you're like, hey, that's your backstory. I did this, by the way. And they're like, oh my god, that's fucked up. I love it. And I'm like, yeah! It's great! So, like, I love it when players give me backstory. And I do tweak stuff in it from time to time, but a lot of times I give them a heads up. Like, I tell them, I'm like, hey, I don't think that this and this works given the world we have. What if we did this? And I try and like have that conversation. Like, whenever I want to make a change, I talk to them about it. I don't just tell them, because that's kind of the collaborative part. Like, give me some, take some, and I'll work with you too. And let's work on this together, because I don't want to just like shoehorn you into a position that you don't want to be. Because like, maybe this change that I'm trying to make is so important to your character's backstory that maybe I'm not seeing, right?
Yeah. How much of it though do you do, like when I say you're doing things with their backstory, I mean like in the game, like, you know, hey, here's that brother that you mentioned, here he is in the game, and he just walks in the middle of the session, and how much are you be like, hey, your brother's coming in this game, make sure you know, be prepared for that?
I fuck with people. Okay. I will ask
the
them,
joys, like, of DMing.
It's the joys of DMing. Like, I'll read through like the whole book and like maybe a little bit of the next book. Like, I don't like to get too far ahead of myself because of this like living world idea going on in my head. If like by the time they finish the first book, they've made these really drastic decisions that the adventure path didn't plan on them making, I'm gonna have to.
Oh no! Yeah. They always plan for everything in these adventures.
Oh yeah, everything's pre-written. You never have to go off book.
No.
So like, I read through like the first book, and then I'll be like, okay. And then I come up with like these different situations, and I see these points, and I'm like, hey, tell me more about this. Like, what do you think your character is? And that's one of the things I love to do. I love to give my players homework. I love to give them these little questions that I'm like, I'm going to get this information from you, and you're not going to see it coming. Like, what's your favorite food? Oh, there's a cursed feast that actually has your favorite food in like 6 months. Oh, like, it's those things, right? You're planting the seeds in your players' brains, and you're tricking them into thinking they're giving you superfluous information, and you're like asking them questions about like their siblings and how did their sibling relationships affect them as people, and like what character aspects do they have, and like what was their relationship with their father like, and you're just like plucking in all of these things, right? Because they're relevant. They're relevant to the character, and they're relevant as to who they are. And a lot of times, like, maybe players didn't think about that. And so having it be this fun homework time, right? Everyone's come together. We're learning about each other meta-wise, but a lot of times too, I found that those little decisions we make are easy threads to pull on later, but they're also easy threads for the characters to pull on themselves. Players will make their characters talk to each other about these things. They'll find little ways to reintroduce this meta knowledge into the actual narrative. So the players and the characters can be closer to each other, right? The characters can now be friends because the players knew this about the other character.
One of the nice things that I have found for the mechanics side of that, the real nitpicky parts, is there's a website, miniworld.com. They've got a list of the 100 most important things to know about your character, and they dive into everything from who are your parents and like how do you feel about them, what do they do, to favorite foods, to heroes, and you know, what is your biggest fear, to, you know, what color are your eyes? Yeah. All of that stuff just gets just picked apart. And I don't personally go through every single question for every single character, but it, you know, I like to read through it and make those little decisions as I'm like, well, that's a thing. What would they do on a Saturday night if they didn't have anything else to adventure? You know,
right? And that's another thing that can like really start to bring things out in characters is like Saturday nights. Like, what does your character do in downtime?
Yeah.
How the fuck do they relax? They just fucking killed like 20 goblins. That's stressful. I don't care what level you are. That's fucking nuts. Oh man, one of the questions I love that like really gets people fucked up is talking about the first time they killed a sentient creature, and like how did they deal with that morally? And it's really interesting because like having that question, like after like a first big battle or something, and everyone's like, "Yeah, we had so much fun," and then asking that at the top of the game is like, "Tell me about your characters, the first time your character had to kill someone." That is like, and sometimes like the characters are like, actually this would be the first time. I'm like, great, play that out for me. And it's it's fucked up. It's a bit fucked up, but like it's the realism of the game. It's the supervillain. Yes.
Let's go deeper into that.
Tell me about your inner workings of your tragedy and trauma. But and that's kind of where I get into my games a bit deeper. I love having fun with games. But I think that if your characters get like too kill happy, if they are just like, yeah, let's go, let's get the loot, the body, and like, let's capture this guy and let's, you know, kill him and everything, you can get caught up in that as like you're winning, and bringing it back down to earth and like really throwing you in the moment, I will fuck with you so hard on like people begging for their lives and like breaking out in tears and vomiting if they see gore. And if like you guys are getting too combat happy, I will describe viscerally how exactly you killed that creature, because it's that mind shock, right? It's that little bit of mind fuck that brings you into the moment and you're like, you're right, this is really fucked up what's happening. Like, it's gruesome, it's nasty, it's bad. And that really slows people down. And I think it gets them more into the moment and into the story about what's happening. And it lets their characters react more naturally to how a real person would react. Because we're in such like a culture nowadays of like video games and like running through stuff like that. Like, it's easy to have that bleed over with like a video game mentality and a wargaming mentality into your RPGs, because they share a lot of similar elements, and there is an aspect of wargaming to RPGs, but it's really bringing it into a mindset of like, how are you reacting to this? You know, it's acting essentially. It's all improv, and you want to be reacting, not acting.
One of the things I like to do is every couple sessions, I'll just start off with like, okay, we've been going through a lot. What are each of your characters thinking? Like, where's your headspace at right now?
Yes.
Like, what's going on inside? Because one of my groups, they really do just want that, you know, Greyhawk experience. Kill the monsters, take the loot, go home. Yeah. And, you know, that's what they want. It's fine. It's great. We'll run for that. But, you know, they don't really role play with each other. So having that conversation really helps build up their characters as well, like not just to each other, but I think a lot even for themselves, because they stop and go, well, what is my character thinking right now? Like, because I've just been thinking, like, which spell do I use next? But, like, I just, you know, went through three floors of a tower, and after marching all day, and my guys probably should be fucking exhausted.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's kind of where we get into this other idea of role-playing, like, especially for a podcast. When one of my players, David, was like, hey, I'm going to play this kind of, like, mysterious stranger, like, silent type, really kind of broody, and I'm like, cool, let's do that. He doesn't talk a lot, which isn't great for an audio medium. But one of the things we did is I'm like, when we start to, like, characters start to talk to each other and we talk about what's going on, describe what your character looks like, kind of describe their thought pattern and their process. And so he has probably a lot more exposition about what he's doing than he has lines, but it works because you internal monologue is wonderful for games, and it's a really good way. Like, I think everyone should do an internal monologue, like, my character's kind of thinking about this and this, and this is why they're going to do that. And like, other than like, my character's going to open the door, it's like, my character is like, he's feeling kind of rushed, you know, he's nervous, like all of this stuff is happening, he just wants to get into the next space. And so yeah, He isn't going to search for traps. He's just going to open the door and go in. And that's so much better than saying, I open the door.
Yeah, no, I agree. Especially with an audio medium like, I mean, at the basis, podcasts are for entertainment. Yeah. We play for ourselves, but at the same time, we're recording it for an audience. So having that, it also helps you build and think about what your character's doing yourself. Because, you know, as much as I will oftentimes just think, well, I'm doing it because of this, I struggle to give voice to the reason because it's just not a habit that I have. Probably something I should work on.
Yeah, and I think that's another thing to point out. Like, playing RPGs, recording podcasts, it's all a process. Like, you're going to know things now you didn't know a year ago. Like, in any aspect of the game or the production, like, it's constantly evolving, and you're constantly changing with it. And you know what? That's fine.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
How long are we going to go?
Well, I was thinking for about an hour.
Okay, cool.
Which we're an hour and 6 minutes here. We've covered all the topics. I didn't even have to bring some of these up. You went through all of topic two all by yourself.
I did, didn't I?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, fantastic. Everything kind of, it all feeds together, you know? Oh, yeah. It's all a nebulous jumble that, like, one thing leads to another, and it all kind of interacts together in this beautiful fucking machine.
That pretty much covered. Do you have any closing thoughts on collaborative storytelling?
Yes. Closing thoughts on collaborative storytelling. Do it. Fucking do it. Like, make concessions at the table. Be friendly to each other. Work together to tell the story, because I guarantee you that's going to be more fun than trying to work against each other. Like, there's going to be less frustration. It's going to be more fun. The story's going to be way more interesting. And when you do those big kind of fucked up things, they're going to be accepted. And everyone's going to love each other at the end of it anyway. I think there you go. Yeah, be nice to each other so you can fuck each other up. All right, I'm done.
That's good general life advice, too.
Just it's good general life advice. Yeah, no, but, like, yeah, be nice at the table. Like, work together to tell stories, because, like, I'm not going to think of everything as, like, the guide for the story. I'm not going to come up with everything. Like, I want to hear what you guys are going to come up with, because, like, if I'm going to, you know, maybe I only have the color blue in my paint palette. Maybe you have, like, red. Cool ass painting for, like, blue, I guess, but, like, get some red in there. That's fucking great. I didn't think of that at all. Work together. Be open to ideas. Don't be a dick.
My closing thoughts will be that I'll play the devil's advocate on this and say, make sure that both sides of the screen are working together, because sometimes the DM has a story point that can't be changed.
That's true.
And you have to accept that. Yeah. And the DM, you need to be willing to change most of your other plot points that can be changed, or at least slightly, you know, maybe, you know, if you've only got the blue and you don't want it, can't be red, maybe it can be a little purplish.
Yeah, just mix it a little bit in there, like, make it work. Yeah. There, nothing's set in stone, except for some things which are set in stone, in which case change the color of the paint it or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
There's some sort of deep metaphor in here that I think we're skirting around. So, listener, whatever metaphor that you're coming up with, that's it.
Yes. And if you're colorblind, sorry, Pete.
I'm sorry too, Pete.
All right. Well, James, thank you very, very much for coming and talking to me. Well, being there at, I presume, your own home to talk to me in my home.
Hanging out in my own home, talking to you in your home. And this was wonderful. Let me know when you want to do this again. We'll come up with another topic and I'll just word vomit on you again.
Oh, yeah. No, that'll be great. I'm hoping to hear from Jason Ellis from the What Do You Do podcast, if you're not
familiar. Oh, my God. Yes.
Yes, he is. He was kind of the original motivation, because he does so much for so many people I wanted to get him, like, hey, everybody who doesn't know who this is who this is.
Everyone needs to know who Jason is. He does an amazing job. I have found so many great shows because of it. More specifically, I have found a Pathfinder community within the podcast realm because of him.
Oh,
he's doing amazing work. Listen to what he has to say. Hi, Jason. You're great. We love you.
And, you know, we're hoping to hear from the Crack Die podcast. And
ooh, that's a good one, too.
I haven't actually, they're also in my list, but I'm going to have to jump them up a few spaces if, you know, once we nail down a time so as I can go in knowing who I'm talking to. Yeah. And after that, you know, even if I get some more bites, I'm definitely going to come back because this was a great conversation. You know, just keep going through this. There are so many different potential topics to talk about.
Yeah, there are. Like, it's an ever-evolving landscape. And I always like these meta discussions, especially with people that play the game and are also, like, in the industry, quote-unquote, of podcasting and specifically storytelling.
Oh, yeah. That's going to be it for us, listeners. Thank you very much. If you are on the Shield Bash feed, please hop over to Dimension Door. If you're not familiar with the Reign of Winter adventure path, all the better. If you are, and you know that book 5 worst kept secret in the industry, then go and listen anyway, because it's still a really fun podcast to listen to. And if you're on the Dimension Door feed, you know, please come on over and check us out, as long as you don't mind quite a bit of, it's hard to say whether it's childish humor or adult humor, because when you're a child, people say only adults should make that joke, but when you're an adult, everybody says they're childish jokes. We're there. You can come listen to Serpent Skull.
You described it perfectly. Everyone knows exactly what you're talking about. I guarantee it.
Yes. All right. See you next time, James.
Yeah, I'll see you next time.
Shield Bash is made in association with Knights of the Octagon and Farmageddon Gaming Convention. Find us online at shieldbash.net, on Facebook at Shield Bash, on Twitter at Bash Shield, and on YouTube at Shield Bash. Music by Lee Rosevere. Serpent Skull and Pathfinder are the property of Paizo Publishing Incorporated. Leave a comment on iTunes for a chance to hear us read it out on the podcast. Questions and comments can be sent to shieldbashpodcast@gmail.com.